Hi, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Stacey.
And this is the Body Smart Podcast.
And today we are on a mission to cut through all the misinformation that is out there at the moment. I feel like it's a misinformation overload.
All the time.
It's literally all over social media, podcasts, like really well-respected podcasts, having supposedly really, really well-respected guests coming out with total BS. Yeah. It's not necessarily BS as a standalone fact, but the context is not usually there.
That's what makes it so much more confusing is the fact that there's some truth followed by a lot of BS. And you're like, well, that's definitely true because I hear everyone say that. But then this, I've not heard this before. Is this true? And then it's just everyone seems to be contradicting everyone else. And then people are like, well, why should I listen to you? And why should I listen to you?
And you're probably wondering why you should listen to us because we're just another podcast. But basically what we have done is we've obviously got our own opinions on things, but we've gone and looked at the actual research behind all of these crazy claims. And what we want to do is give you that information in context. Because I think what happens a lot of the time at the moment is, you know, what's going to be clickable, what's going to be shareable, what's going to get loads of views is this really controversial headline.
Polarizing, yeah.
Without the context, because then it's not that sexy.
Yeah. And I would also add as well, just for more reasons before this, there's a lot of people who just spout information or talk about stuff or talk about studies, but aren't actually practically in the field doing the work. Like we are working with 700-800 clients at any one point.
Not just me and Jamie, by the way, that would be a bit insane.
Yeah, with our team of 15 coaches now, and we're working with 700-800 clients at any one point, getting hundreds of testimonials and reviews every single month, and getting people sustainable fat loss results. And I think that in itself, that's not to just be look how great we are, whatever else. That's to say hey, what we're saying, we actually execute and preach and work with our clients on a day-to-day basis, and it gets them results consistently. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. So let's go through some of these crazy claims that are all over the place right now.
So you guys have probably heard some of these, but fruit makes you fat. Eggs will kill you. Coffee will ruin your gut health. Bananas are worse than table sugar. And oats are the devil.
Yeah. And we had to cut this list down because we asked on stories the other day about what myths would you want us to bust? And there was just so many, wasn't there?
So much. Yeah. And there's a consensus of people are just confused more than ever because of, people are getting better at making content and videos and engaging hooks and doing all of these things, but it's to get your attention. But often it's confusing people more. Yeah. Should I go carnivore, keto, not have eggs? Is this going to kill me? Spike my blood sugar?
Vegan.
It never ends.
So we're going to start with eggs because I feel like this is one of the things that people go a little bit mad about. And actually, there's such a healthy, convenient, good food to include in your diet that we need to strip out some of the fear here.
Yeah.
Now, there was fear because back in sort of 70s, 80s, they did some research and the science wasn't very well developed at that point. But they basically looked at epidemiological studies and went, oh, look, the people that eat a lot of eggs, they seem to have a lot of cholesterol and they have a lot of heart disease. Mm-hmm. All right, let's limit everyone eating eggs. But that science wasn't a situation where they gave some people eggs and some people no eggs and looked at the outcomes. Mm. And actually now looking back, a lot of the researchers are saying, well, it was probably other factors. The people who had eggs every day also had bacon and sausages and it was in a fry up. It wasn't like they were having poached eggs on whole grain toast with avocado. So there has been a lot more science now and the recommendation is different. But if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, this is how many eggs you were supposed to eat a week. And that is three.
Yeah.
A week
versus
now the recommendation is still if you've got high cholesterol, which we'll go into in a minute, probably limit it to one a day. Mm-hmm. Most people though, you're totally fine with two a day.
Yeah.
Jamie, how many do you eat?
Well, I actually brought how many eggs a week I have. So we've got a box here. We've got one, two. Let's open these up, okay? Because there's a fair few. And these are white eggs. Which you were a bit shocked by, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I've never actually received a box of white eggs in them. And I think in the US, I think it's quite normal. But in the UK, all our eggs tend to be brown. So we opened up the boxes and six or seven of the boxes were white.
Do we know why that is? It just down to the...
There you go, there's some brown ones. I mixed them up.
is it down to... Because people used to say, which apparently is not true, people they are white eggs and bleached. But that isn't... Yeah, I'm looking at Simon to fact check us here.
I think it's just different types of chickens.
Yeah, different types of chickens, yeah.
And I actually think in the UK, normally the white ones go into the catering industry because the brown ones look more wholesome, they're fresh from the farm and they're more
the fall here. But I've got seven six-pack of eggs here.
So 42.
42 eggs. Yeah, that's it. I eat like 6 eggs a day. And it's actually just become like a running joke anywhere I go and order breakfast. People are like almost giving me like a second take. Like, how many eggs? Yeah. What have we got here?
Oh, yeah. So the eggs are definitely not bleached. It's just different chickens that don't produce the pigment.
It's different chickens. But you do typically see if you go to America, most of the eggs are white.
Yeah.
And most of the eggs are brown over here. So I don't know if that's the...
It's probably just a different benefit to like maybe those kinds of chickens make bigger eggs. I don't know. I'm not an egg expert. Expert.
Expert, eh?
But yeah, obviously we're not saying you should personally go out and eat 42 eggs a week. But the point is, in the midst of a balanced diet and active lifestyle, when you're managing your cholesterol through other means, like, this isn't necessarily a problem. But I do want to talk about cholesterol because it's one of those words that gets chucked around and like people say things all the time. Like recently, it's not even recently anymore, but do you remember that documentary, What the Health?
Yes. I mean, I would be very cautious of ever taking your nutrition and health advice from a Netflix documentary.
True. But yes. At the time, do you remember, it was literally like people were taking it as gospel and changing their complete diets.
Yeah.
And they made statements like eating one egg a day is as bad as smoking 5 cigarettes a day.
Yeah. Which
it's really not.
No.
And I think understanding why people make these claims and understanding how that applies to you is the big difference in everything we're going to talk about today, because there is probably a portion of the population probably should limit their eggs.
Yeah.
But most of us, if you're active and healthy and you've got a balanced diet, probably fine.
Yeah, they can really be. Like, I mean, I'll sort of give some context around why I eat 6 eggs, because I think that might be important. One is there's a load of protein in them. I used to have a much higher carbohydrate-based diet and like lower fat, high protein. But now over the years, I've actually switched to, I still get a lot of carbs in my diet, but actually I've gone for more fat. I find it much more satiating. And I've actually seen from my blood work that my health markers have got better. So yeah, being having the 6 eggs, and then if I ever want to actually cut down my calories, an easy way of me doing that is I just reduce the amount of yolks. So like the yolk is what's got the fat in and most of the calories, the white has got all the protein in it. So sometimes you could have, like most people even listening to this could have 6 eggs, but maybe just have 2 yolks.
Well, that's the thing, is the cholesterol's in the yolks.
The cholesterol's in the yolk, yeah.
So and that's why like egg white omelets were such a big thing on like the Miami, whatever it was, South Beach diet.
Yeah, but that's all the goodness as well to an extent. You can get you get pure protein, like literally calorie for calorie, it's pure protein from egg whites. So, you know, you can still have like 1 or 2 whole eggs. I mean, if you wanted to bump up your protein intake, an easy way to do that is to add egg whites.
Yeah.
Or like, people get like egg white cartons and stuff.
Yeah, but if you have a dog, they love the yolk.
They love the yolk, do they?
That's what I do with mine.
Yeah, because they used to just go down the sink, which always used to feel like a bit of a waste, but it's just...
You need to get a dog.
Yeah. Don't put them in the bin. Do not put your egg yolks in the bin. It gets out somehow. It's not good. but yeah, that's sort of my main reason around doing it. So yeah. And they're just, they're tasty.
They're cheap.
They're cheap. They're convenient food. So yeah. They are really... I see them as like a superfood, really convenient, really tasty. I've had like pretty much the same breakfast for... I used to actually just have like eggs and a bagel. Then it switched, and my breakfast I've had for about 5 years consistently now is like avocado, eggs, 6 eggs, like 1 or 2 pieces of whole grain toast, sometimes butter, sometimes not, and maybe some tomatoes.
Yeah. So you've got some veg, you've got some healthy carbs, you've got some good fats in your eggs. It's great.
There's about 60 grams of protein in that meal, first meal that I have. So it's a...
But we also need to put this in context. You are a much bigger human being than I am, or maybe the person listening is.
Of course.
So listening probably doesn't need 60 grams of protein or that many calories.
6'3", 210, 215 pounds. So, you know, I've probably got quite a bit of muscle on me compared to the next person.
And very active.
I'm very active. Yeah. So like those things do matter. And it's just like, it's when we always look at like metabolism and how many calories you need, it's relative to the size of the person, how muscular the person is, and how active the person
is. And the other thing I want to point out is why eggs are such a good choice is there's a lot of interest now of getting good provenance from your food and ethical food.
Yeah.
And it, at least in the UK, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but it is much, much easier for me to find free range organic eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel comfortable with like what I'm putting in my body and be able to afford that compared to getting the same amount of protein from free range organic meat, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It depends where you source them from as well. But like, yeah, it's they're really cheap, inexpensive food, even if you can get them organically as well.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love the fact that I moved back from living in Asia a couple of years ago and I can literally like walk up a lane and go to this lady who sells eggs from her chickens.
Yeah.
I love that. I just know where they're from. I know what they're fed.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't get that with meat. So if ethics and like where your food comes from is important to you, then this is a good way to add some animal protein into your diet if you have got misgivings on other things. But let's go back to the cholesterol, because I think it is important that people understand, and you touched on the fact that it's in the yolks. And people are always like, oh, my cholesterol's high. But the fact is there are actually two types of cholesterol. And cholesterol in itself is not bad. Like, your body actually does make it. Makes about 60 to 70% of the cholesterol that you have because you actually do need it. It's important, and it helps you do other things. It builds cells and certain hormones. You know, it's not there just to be a bad guy. But the production of LDL cholesterol, which is like the bad, inverted commas, bad cholesterol, comes from saturated fats generally, or trans fats. And you can, you know, these have, eggs have got cholesterol, pure cholesterol in them, but generally your body makes the cholesterol from the fat you're getting, saturated fats in your diet. So one of the main takeaways really is, if you're eating like Jamie for 42 eggs a week, but you don't really have like processed meats, loads of butter on everything, loads of processed foods with fat added to them.
Yeah, it's relative. I think that's always what it comes down to. If you were to, if you have a highly processed diet and are getting loads of saturated fats and trans fats in your diet, and then you're eating six eggs on top as well, is that going to do your health markers? Is it going to put them in a better place? Probably not. You know what I mean? So it's like worth addressing the rest of your diet. And again, I think this is, it always seems like an extreme thing to do when I mention this, but I actually just feel like it's a really responsible thing to do, which is like, get regular blood work. Like, for how cheap and convenient and available it is nowadays for most people, you can get like blood tests for anywhere between £30 and £100. And it's just like, just being able to like, we say it all the time to clients, but like, what gets measured gets managed, and prevention is always better than the cure. So like, if you know when you're in your 30s or your 40s that you maybe need to make some dietary changes, that's a hell of a lot easier to make them at that point than having like heart disease or heart
finding
attack.
Out in your 50s, oh, I've got high cholesterol. How did that happen?
Yeah, it's just like, the longer you keep up a habit, it's going to be harder to break. So the more awareness you can put on different parts of your health and you can make those sort of dietary changes, the easier it will be. And yeah, for some people, like due to genetics, some people will be able to tolerate more or less of different foods. And that's, you know, you can have two people on the exact same diet and get completely different outcomes because of genetics, because of size, because of muscle mass, because of activity levels. So these are all things to be aware of. And it's never, you know, I'm always trying to get people to like not disempower themselves by going, oh, it's so much easier for them or her. Instead, just like, hey, just find out what works for you and just work with what you've got.
Yeah. And the other thing as well is looking at everything in context of everything else in your life. So like you're just saying, your activity level, but also your diet as a whole. This is going to be a running theme today. You guys listening probably like, stop saying the same thing. But basically everything we're going to talk about today is, if the rest of your diet is balanced and varied, you're probably good. And I think understanding nutrition, we always talk about it as a skill that's going to serve you for life, or a knowledge base that's going to serve you for life. So understanding nutrition means you don't have to be pulled around by all these wild claims, because you can like check that against your baseline information and be like, no, I'm good. I'm fine. So when it comes to what a balanced diet even means, we do want some healthy fats. We do want some carbs in there. We don't want to just be carnivore or just be vegan, probably, because getting enough protein from animal sources is important, not just for the protein, but for all the other vitamins that are in there, B12 particularly.
And to get complete proteins and get enough amino acids.
So that's what, when we're talking about a healthy, varied, balanced diet, that's what we're talking about. And you do want to eat fats. Like, they're not the devil. So although we're saying, you know, maybe you could have an egg white omelet and add a couple of yolks in, you do want to make sure you're adding some of those yolks in. Probably about 30% fat would be a good amount for most people,
as in a total amount of
of your calories per day. And if you don't know what that would look like, then I definitely recommend tracking your food for a couple of days, not even to like set yourself a calorie goal, but just to like learn, what do I roughly eat, what foods have got fat in, and how much of my breakfast is fat, and that's, stuff like that.
That's a good one to break down, because even if you've never tracked your calories, or even if you have tracked your calories and just calories alone, you will still be getting a macronutrient split of protein, carbs and fat. So let's say you eat 2,000 calories a day, that will be split down into protein, carbs and fat, and there will be a percentage of how much you're getting out of those sort of calories. So yeah, just having an awareness on it and seeing how much that you're getting. It can vary. Some people do have a much higher fat diet and like lower carbohydrate, and some people have, the pendulum swings the other way and they have much more carbs and less fat. Again, it's it's finding what works for you. Some people, when they have loads of carbs, they're just like, I feel a bit sluggish and bloated and I have low energy. I feel better on a higher fat diet. It's like, okay, that's fine. You know, again, sometimes you've just got to be, you know, if you are having a much, much higher fat diet, maybe it is worth just like getting your bloods done and just checking things are in a healthy place.
And also minding, when we're talking about healthy fats, again, inverted commas, the ones that you want to minimize is saturated fats. And these are the ones, like I said, that can contribute to cholesterol. And the way to know if it's a saturated fat is if it's something, if you leave it at room temperature, it will go solid. So, or it will not be a natural liquid. So like an olive oil is not a saturated fat because that's obviously runny. Butter is solid, right? Coconut oil is solid. Meat, if you look at like a chunk of raw steak, the fat is solid at room temperature. So if you're ever wondering like, how do I know even what I'm eating?
Yeah.
That's a really baseline quick way to gauge, is it saturated or not?
Yeah.
That's the one that you probably want to be mindful of minimizing. And then the other one is trans fats.
Trans fats,
yeah. So do you want to explain what the deal is with those?
I mean, what's the actual, it's like
hydrogenated.
Hydrogenated, yeah. You can catch it on the back of packets. It typically is in foods to make them last a lot longer. So you'll typically find like those donuts that are in Costco or certain foods that are just there and they make the foods last for ages. But our bodies really struggle to process them. It can take months for our bodies to process these type of fats. Yeah.
They're actually not allowed in processed food anymore. They've recently changed it,
Maybe in the UK.
Yeah, okay.
And there's also, I think, you can get away with not labelling this ingredient of fat in foods if it's less than a percentage.
Okay.
So sometimes it can actually catch you out. And I think that the easy way to sort of detect whether you're having something that possibly has got trans fats in it is, has it got like a really long shelf life? Has it already been, you know, in the shop for a long time, maybe on display, and hasn't gone off? And yeah, they're probably like the main sort of things. But yeah, like, so I think there's like a percentage based, like if it's less total calories from trans fats than a certain percentage, they don't have to advertise it or, you know, show that it's in the product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as always, again, I'm going to be repeating myself here, but the less processed your diet, the less chance you're going to be eating any of these trans fats. You can create trans fats through cooking by heating certain oils to very, very high temperature. But the amount that you do, and the amount that you do that in your diet is going to be minimal, and it's not really something you need to stress about.
A good one here would be any foods that have been invented in the last 100 years have more of a chance of having trans fats in it. The ones, if you go back to what, like 1920?
Yeah.
Like what foods are trans fats in?
That's actually a really good point, because people are often like, well, what's processed and what's not? Because like yogurt's processed.
Just go back 100 years.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, that's an easy way to think about it, because, you know, what was on the shelves back then, yeah, there's still going to be certain things that were canned and whatever else, but like there's probably like a lot less. Like a lot of new, quote unquote, new foods that are coming out, they're going to be the highly palatable, highly processed foods that are really addictive, you know, where you can, you know, once you pop, you can't stop.
Yeah. Okay. So if somebody does want to have a bunch of eggs.
Yes.
The other things that you need to do to balance that out, we've talked about like minimizing your saturated fat in the rest of your diet, but also fiber is super important. So the fact you're having avocado, whole grain toast with your eggs is really great, because this binds to the cholesterol in your digestive system. So we've already talked about the fact there is cholesterol in the eggs, but that's not as big of a deal, because 70% of your cholesterol in your body, you make it yourself anyway. However, if you have some fiber, a lot of that cholesterol is going to get just taken straight out of your digestive system at the other end anyway. So having your eggs with some vegetables and some whole grain toast, not with your bacon and your sausages and that's it.
Yeah.
That's really helpful. And the other thing is exercise, because exercise stimulates the enzymes in your body to what's called reverse cholesterol transport. So any that's in your bloodstream, it then goes and kind of cleans that up when you exercise. So if you are regularly exercising, especially strength training, you're also kind of helping like keep the corridors clear in the terms of your arteries having that buildup of cholesterol.
I think this is like, again, it's like the running theme of, you know, if you are regularly active, regularly exercising, drinking enough water, eating mainly a whole food diet, like a lot of this stuff, like you don't need to even consider or be as worried about, because just by default, like your body's able to either deal with it or just be in a much healthier state. Versus like, yes, if you live a really sedentary lifestyle, you're overweight or obese, like a lot of these things do start to become more important. You have to make more changes. It's all, honestly, like that's why I always just say, you know, if you're like a foodie, and you love your food and you want to eat more great food and have more choice and be in more abundance, it's like get in great shape. Get in great shape and be dead fit and active and have loads of muscle, because you just get to enjoy so many more of these foods without even like the consequence to an extent, because your body can adapt and deal and metabolize the foods that you're getting on a regular basis.
Yeah, definitely. And coming on to our next topic, because we're talking about having a balanced, healthy diet, lots of fruit and vegetables. Not even fruit is safe, because apparently fruit makes you fat.
And fruit is one of those foods that's definitely been there 100 years ago. You know what I mean? It's fruit makes you fat. I mean, so no food inherently makes you fat. Excess calories make you gain excess body fat. So like, yes, if you can, if you overeat broccoli, broccoli can make you fat. It would just be
You'd have to eat a lot.
You'd have to eat a lot. You'd probably be sick before you get there.
You'd have bad wind.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be the most enjoyable. Now, could you overeat on lots of fruit to make it so you become fat? Like, I mean, you can eat a box of grapes, probably got like 500 calories in it.
It's a lot easier to overeat on fruit than it would be vegetables, right?
But it's still like in context, like, and we've said this before, like if nobody's, it's easy to drink a, you know, an apple juice with five squeezed apples in it than it is to actually eat five. I don't think I've ever seen anyone eat five apples. I'm sure, you know, there's a person out there that can. But
two would be the limit for most people. Like you have one, you're like, oh, that was really nice, I'll have another one.
And I don't think I've ever gone back another second apple.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah, only because we get little ones for Nate.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, probably anytime I've seen Americans come over to the UK, they actually think our apples are like so cute. They're just like tiny because their foods are just so like, it's like this, twice the size of your fist as an apple over there. But even still, like, you know, you typically are not over consuming on some fruits. Some, yes, you can. But fruit isn't inherently bad. It's full of vitamins, minerals, fiber. It is satiating. Yes, it's got sugar in it, but it doesn't mean that, like, again, it's this whole demonization.
Yeah, well, let's just talk about that whole sugar is bad thing, shall we? Because actually, your body really likes sugar. Mm-hmm. So we are wired to want to eat it. And there's a reason for that, because it is the most accessible energy source for our bodies to use.
Yeah.
So if you think about evolution, your body wants to be efficient. You didn't want to have to spend hours and hours a day trying to forage enough food to stay alive. So you learned, if I just eat a bit more sugary foods, that gives me energy that's really quick and easy to access, I'd have to waste another hour trying to find something else.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
It does.
And it's what your brain likes to use. It's what your muscles like to use. So it is not bad. Your body is evolved to use sugar. It's fine. However, where I think this fruit makes you fat business comes from, there is some science. You can see how someone's taken that, twisted it, and then been like, aha.
I think this is the problem with a lot of these other, you know, podcasts that we're saying that talk about health or all these other issues, is that anyone nowadays can find a reference and a point and a study to back up the singular point that they are trying to make. Like, you can do it. And it's like, most of the time, it's completely blown out of context and just, and doesn't, it just leads people to say ridiculous things like fruit is bad for you.
Yeah. Let's just explain why, because I think when people hear it, they're like, oh yeah, okay, I can see maybe where someone got it from. So basically, you've got different types of sugar. You've got glucose, you've got fructose, you've got sucrose. If we look at like table sugar, that's like half glucose, half fructose. So that's where these stupid claims like a banana is worse than table sugar, because a banana just has fructose.
Yeah.
However, fructose is not the devil in itself, but if you are eating too much fructose, then your liver can't deal with it, because that's where fructose is dealt with rather than glucose gets metabolized all through your body. Your liver can't deal with that much fructose, and so it starts to turn it into fat. Hence how you can see...
But only if you were to consume...
Only more, if you were to consume too more. Much. And this study that this is...
But only as well if you were to consume more calories than you burn.
No. So that's where this whole thing comes from. So if you would then burn the fat, but your body would still, before you burnt the fat, turn the fructose into the fat for you to then burn.
Okay.
But the study that this comes from is that you would have to have 255 grams of fructose a day before that starts.
Is that 255 grams of sugar?
Fructose, yeah. Not sugar, like spoons of sugar, because that's half glucose, half fructose.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that.
So you'd have to have like 500 grams of sugar.
Shit.
Yeah. So let's put this in the context of how many apples or bananas you'd have to get to have 255 grams of fructose. Like 25.
Yeah, no one's doing that.
Because the average banana or the average apple has about 9 grams of fructose in it. No one's doing that. But people who are eating processed foods very well might be having high amounts in high fructose corn syrup or added sugar in other ways into their food.
Right. Yeah.
So if you are drinking sugary drinks, it is very easy.
Like a glass of orange juice, or like Innocent smoothies and stuff. It's like 60 grams of sugar in one of the smoothies, or in some of the fruit ones I've had before, and it's just not worth it. Sometimes I don't even think it's worth your teeth and how you feel afterwards. Like the only time I would actually think you would need upwards of 40 to 50 grams of sugar in a sitting would be after like the most intense workout of your life.
Yeah.
Other than that.
But also you would want glucose in that situation, not fructose anyway.
Yeah. It's crazy that these are like labeled as like health drinks as well in a lot of places.
So I just had a quick look. A Pepsi has got about 38 grams of fructose in it. Mm-hmm. So if you are having multiple sugary drinks, you're eating processed foods like bakery items, maybe that have got a lot of corn syrup in them. It isn't unreasonable to think that 255 gram limit might be reached. But again, this is putting it into context, because if you have a generally healthy, balanced diet with 80% whole foods, your fruit here is not the problem.
In fact, it's a benefit. You know what I mean? It's giving you lots of vitamins, minerals, lots of color in your diet. I don't know. I'm going to ask Simon again to check this. Are we actually drawn to fruit as well because of the color? Sure, that's a thing that works, because it's really colorful, and we're drawn even more to color from fruit because we know it's got.
Because also,
this could be complete bullshit.
All different fruits and vegetables, different colors indicate that they contain different micronutrients.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. So, for example, like orange fruits and vegetables all tend to contain similar kinds of nutrients. Purple contain different ones. So that's why they say eat the rainbow.
Yeah, I was about to say that, eat the rainbow. Yeah. It's like a really good... And that's because a lot of people's diets are just beige.
Yeah, or really, they just eat peas.
They just eat peas, yeah.
I'm thinking of my two-year-old. Oh, right.
Yeah, so like eat the rainbow and get lots of color, because lots of vitamins, minerals, fiber. But again, I think this is the same thing. Like everything can be taken out of context, or anything at an extreme can cause issues. Like if you drink too much water, you will drown and die. You know what I mean? Like it's as simple as water.
Yeah, because the dose is the issue, not the actual thing itself.
Exactly.
We're going to talk about water later, actually. Okay. Come on to that. Fruit, let's say you have a generally healthy diet and you're now worried like, should I cut fruit out? Because that might be stopping me losing weight. It is not going to be stopping you losing weight if you're managing your overall calorie intake.
Yeah.
If you're eating 80% whole foods, you do not need to be stressing about your fruit.
And I think again, it's just like, it's just moderating your portions. So, if you're having, like, depending on the size of you as a person and how many calories you've got allotted for your goals, if you're getting like an extra large apple, an extra large banana, you're getting all these, like, eating a full pineapple. Like, yes, could you like rack up your calories? Of course you could. You still need to moderate your portions.
Mm, actually, that's a really good point. I just want to raise some diet plans, inverted commas, say that fruit and vegetables are free.
Yes.
If you are genuinely trying to watch your calorie intake, you do want to count your fruit and vegetables. Now, I think the reason those plans say them is to encourage, like, let's get more whole foods into your diet.
Yeah.
They're free. Mm. Like, it creates the right mindset. But if you are trying to be in a calorie deficit, they're not free. They still have calories.
You can understand the reason behind it, because if someone eats more fruits and vegetables, they're typically going to be more satiated and fuller for longer, get more vitamins, get more minerals. But then that can work for some people, but then for others, they particularly like might get to a point where they get stuck and they don't know why, and it's because they're having a couple of hundred or 500 plus calories a day from fruit and veg, which they're not counting.
And particularly because they're considered like healthy foods, people will say, well, I'm gonna balance out my pizza by having some fruit for my snack.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work like that.
Or put pineapple on your pizza.
I don't want to start that debate. So basically, I think that from what Si's just found about why fruits are colourful, there's not...
It seems mixed.
People don't really agree on it. But it's a nice theory.
But I think that just the general theme with a lot of it would be like, don't have a beige diet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, try to have more color in your diet.
Yeah.
And if you have got a lack of color in your diet or a lack of color in your fridge, maybe that's a good sign to be like, hey, maybe I'm going to start adding a bit more color in there.
And fruit is a good way to do that.
Yeah.
So I know people love to have a guideline, because it's all very well saying in moderation or be generally balanced. But what does that actually mean? So the National Institutes of Health in America recommend about 100 grams a day of fructose, fine, when we're looking about weight management. if you've got diabetes or other issues, then speak to your medical provider, because there might be certain guidelines that you might want to follow that are different. But for the general population, 100 grams of fructose is fine. And that's like 10 apples, 10 bananas.
Yeah.
But check your packaging if you're having processed foods, because that's where this is going to ramp up. It's not your fruit. That's the problem.
Sorry to interrupt. Just a quick ask. If you are enjoying this podcast, we do ask if you would go and hit that subscribe button, because our goal is to be able to help all of you guys become body smart. And the way we can do that is by getting better guests on, more experts. And the bigger this podcast gets, the more guests we can get on.
Now, I did just mention diabetes, and I do want to talk about the other reason that fruit gets a bad rep, and that is that it causes a blood sugar spike, apparently. Yes. No, I said apparently. So you mentioned about smoothies and juices and stuff like that. And that obviously is a easy way that people often think, oh, I'm going to boost my fruit and veg intake, and fruit juice counts, smoothie counts. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to add to my diet. I'll just do that.
Yeah.
There's many reasons that I would say probably don't. One is that if you eat an apple, it's going to take you longer. It's going to allow your brain to register. You've eaten something, you're going to feel fuller. If you drink even one apple worth of apple juice, you're not going to feel satiated at all.
Nope.
If it's juice, you're taking out all of the fiber. So you're not slowing down that blood sugar spike.
Yeah.
And why this is an issue is it can lead to insulin resistance if you have too many blood sugar spikes that are too big. So let's just explain that a little bit. Insulin is, everybody kind of vaguely knows this word. It gets thrown around a lot of the time. Insulin is the hormone that's related with diabetes because it helps move sugars from your blood into your cells so that you can actually use it as energy.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of insulin resistance, your cells don't respond very well to the insulin, hence it's resistant. So you just produce more of it because it's not very effective. But if your insulin isn't then still doing enough and your blood sugar just keeps rising up, you are eventually going to lead to type 2 diabetes.
Yep.
And that's why these blood sugar spikes people get concerned about, because if your blood sugar's going up, your body's going to go, oh shit, we need to make more insulin. And you just kind of self-perpetuate the cycle. But the thing is, if you are eating your fruit as fruit, it's not going to have as bad of an impact as you might think.
Because you're getting the fiber and because you're having it as a whole food.
Exactly.
It's taking longer for your body to take that amount of intake in.
And so if you're having your fructose in your soda, or if you're having a smoothie or you're having a juice, maybe you're going to get a blood sugar spike that might cause a problem. If you want to have fruit in your diet, eat it as a piece of food.
Yeah.
The other thing is these...
I think for context on this as well, it's always like relative. Like if you're having fruit smoothies every single day or multiple times a day and maybe getting loads of, you know, other types of sugar in your diet or just sugar in general, then yes, stuff like that can start to become an issue. But if you're just like having like the odd smoothie once a week, fruit smoothie or whatever else, and you're generally fit and active and got a bit of muscle on you, like it's generally just not going to be a problem.
Muscle is the key, because muscle's like a sponge for that sugar in your bloodstream as well.
Yeah.
So if you say you've just done a workout and you come in, you make a smoothie, well, it's a non-issue because your muscle's going to be like, oh, thanks, I can refuel.
Yeah.
And it's going to soak a load of that out anyway. The other thing is if you make a smoothie and you add some protein to it, maybe you add some protein powder or some Greek yogurt, maybe you add some more fiber, like in terms of flaxseed, or you might put some oats in there, and you make it like more of a balanced meal in a drink, again, that's going to slow down that blood sugar spike.
Yeah.
So it's not even to say don't even have a smoothie every day, it's what's in your smoothie that counts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other really interesting thing is I found three quite prominent studies which show that fruit consumption is actually linked to better insulin sensitivity. So there was one in 2021 in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism increased fruit consumption was a reduced risk of developing diabetes. There's another one in 2022 because of the antioxidants that's in fruit. So it's not just about the fiber. So they actually narrowed it down and said, hey, it's actually the antioxidants that lead to lower rates of diabetes and insulin resistance. Another one in 2019 as well, which was very similar. It was about the antioxidants in the fruit. So fruit is not the devil.
Fruit is not the devil. Yeah.
So if you are wanting to incorporate more fruit in your diet, then really think about eating it as a piece of food, not having it in juice, eating it with other things. Mm-hmm. So if you generally have, I don't know, a snack mid-morning and you think, I'm going to start being healthy, I'm just going to have an apple. The fact is, you probably won't be as full from just having an apple compared to eating it with a protein or a fat source as well. Yeah. So it just helps slow down that digestive process, and it also adds more satiating things into the mix, because carbs are quick to be digested. Like I said, your brain, your body wants to get that sugar and use it. Whereas if you add maybe some peanut butter to your apple, it's going to add in some protein, add in some fat.
I mean, I'm sure people are loving that. It's fucking peanut butter on your
apple. I actually am trying to teach my child to like this. He's not getting on board, but I'm like, you don't know how good this is. Dip it in. But yeah, so add a protein or a fat source, maybe cheese as well. Cheese and apple, cheese and grapes. We're not saying go mad on those portions of the cheese or the peanut butter, but just try and add a little bit of everything into your snack so it's more balanced. And the other key thing is, we all talk about five a day, and you know that's like a baseline to aim for like optimum health generally. It's very easy to say, oh, I get my five a day because I have five pieces of fruit, or I have like four pieces of fruit and some juice. Really, you want to be aiming for most of those five a day to be vegetables, and then maybe one or two to be fruit. Yeah. And that is not just because of what we've talked about today with the sugar and stuff like that, but a lot of the beneficial compounds that you get in vegetables, we don't get in other areas of our diet anyway. So you probably have to work harder to get the vegetables in your diet as well, because they're not as fun and tasty and easy to snack on.
I think if you just mix them into your main meal, so it's easy enough to get them in.
It is easy enough, but I think people find it easier to do fruit.
Yeah.
And so just be conscious, like maybe I want to aim for three veg and two fruit, for example, rather than just trying to tick off five fruit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But I think we can all agree, fruit is not going to make you fat if everything else is in moderation and in balance.
And if anything, it's good for you. You know what I mean? It's like, I think that's like a always approach with caution when people are being like really dogmatic around something that almost seems like not logical. You know what I mean? For someone, it's like someone saying like vegetables are bad for you, or like fruit is bad for you, or like water is bad for you. It's like, excuse me, what? You know what I mean? And then if they'd have to really go on to present some sort of concrete evidence and have like thousands and thousands or tens of thousands or even millions of results, because there's billions of people on the planet. We've all been drinking water, eating fruit and eating vegetables for a very long time. So you know what I mean? To come out with some outrageous statement like fruit is bad and we shouldn't be eating fruit. I think just like approach with caution.
Yeah, that's a very polite way of putting it. Next up, this is a really interesting one at the moment, because I should probably say what it is.
Caffeine
and coffee.
Yeah.
So Jamie doesn't, I wouldn't say you're a caffeine monster normally, but you like a coffee.
I would typically drink two or three coffees a day. Yeah.
It's a very like normal, moderate consumption.
It used to be a lot worse.
You are not drinking coffee at the moment.
I'm not drinking coffee at the moment.
You want to tell us why?
I mean, it's like admitting you've got a chip in your armor. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to get my blood pressure a little bit under control. So I've had like pre-hypertension. So my blood pressure has been around 140 over 80. And I'm working with a cardiologist to just get it down. And I wanted to go and try some natural remedies to begin with. And we're just in like the first month of doing this. And it's all like already, like last night, I was like 121 over like 76. So like actually, healthy. I've only been doing it for like 3 weeks. And one of the things that he suggested was no caffeine. And I was like, just cut me deep. Because it's one of those few pleasures of life that I like, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And you know, for me, like when I get up and start my day and get into work and have a cup of coffee, I feel like quite amped up and ready to get into the day. So I do enjoy it. But yes, I have been going caffeine free for, not completely, I had a Coke Zero last night. It's like 30 milligrams of caffeine. But yeah, I've cut out for 3 weeks and my pressure's in a better place. So hopefully by doing this, I can now start to maybe bring it back in, and you know, maybe it'll be one or two a day.
The reason I wanted you to share that is because it really demonstrates everybody is different, and everybody's like tolerance for different foods and different things are varied. Like you'll quite happily eat 42 eggs a week, but you're like, maybe I should cut on my coffee. And if you're listening, the same applies to you. Like there is no one guideline. Most people, we would say, two, three cups of coffee a day is not a crazy amount. You go for it. That's fine. But if you feel, or you find out from doing some preventative medicine, like checking your bloods, maybe for you right now, that isn't working, you can act on it.
Yeah. There's loads of people I know who are having probably like three large double shot coffees a day. And I haven't got an issue with blood pressure, and I haven't got an issue with coffee. And like that's, again, that's fine. And, you know, I would say the reason I've probably got high blood pressure is probably...
It's not to do with the coffee.
It's not to do with the coffee. It's just probably just like the stress and work and the pressure that I put on myself. So there's that. And then if I'm just adding an external thing on top of that as well, it's then creating a problem. So right now, you know, the key would be to, you know, dial back the stimulants or the outside external sources that I can manage, get it back under control, and then start to maybe bring some of that back in while making maybe some lifestyle changes.
Yeah. And the reason that it does affect your blood pressure, and the reason that some people think, oh, we probably shouldn't have too much coffee, and they're probably right, like too much coffee being those double shot espressos, is it does affect your neurotransmitters. So it does increase your adrenaline. It's now, I don't know why they changed the name of it, but they've changed it to epinephrine, and cortisol, so your stress hormone. So it does genuinely have an impact on your body, which would then lead to a stressful kind of experience in your body. Yeah. And that's also why you then perform better, because those kind of neurotransmitters are designed to be able to help you succeed in a fight or flight environment. So using it like tactfully might be an option. So like if you've got a big day and you think, yeah, I need to be on top form today, have a coffee then, but don't have it other days if you know that you're particularly sensitive.
There's a couple of other things as well with coffee. I think one is not having it first thing of the morning. So like when you wake up, you mentioned then like cortisol starts to rise.
Naturally.
And coffee blocks adenosine, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And if you have it straight away, you basically block that natural cortisol rise. And you don't get that like natural wakefulness that you will have when you everyone wakes up and you feel a bit sluggish and off, but then you kind of naturally wake up over that first 90 minutes. If you have a coffee after that, you get like the extra benefits and energy of coffee versus if you have it in straight away and then you have another cup and then another cup, then you typically get this like late morning or early afternoon sort of crash. That's like one of the things I started doing a couple of years ago and I've been like religious with sticking to, because like, who doesn't want to have more energy? Or like, who doesn't want to use something to get more out of it? What I would say, because a lot of people listen and go, I would never do that. If you're somebody that feels you need a ton of caffeine just to even function on a day-to-day basis, you need to, like, you're just masking a bigger problem. And it's often because you're either not getting enough sleep or you're not managing your stress, or you're getting poor quality sleep. And yeah, you need like a medical dose of caffeine just to get through your day. Like that's an issue. Like it's not like the caffeine, you probably have now even more than you necessarily should be having. And then on top of
and
that,
there's a cycle then, because you're not getting good sleep because you're having too much caffeine, so you need it the next day
and it just goes and so on and so forth. But again, I love my coffee. I think most people probably listening do love the coffee, and people get really like I don't even know what the word is.
Protective.
Yeah. Like, don't fucking tell me about my coffee.
Yeah.
I definitely keep drinking your coffee, but you know, you just might need to like, by pushing it back the first 90 minutes of the day, you can get more benefits from coffee. And if you're having to basically survive on coffee for energy, I think that's a really clear sign in terms of like, that's like a great way of your body saying like, hey, like, you know, you maybe shouldn't be ignoring your diet, or you maybe shouldn't be ignoring your stress levels or the amount of sleep that you're getting, because it'll catch up on you.
Yeah, definitely. And so that's one element of why people demonize coffee. I can't even believe people demonize coffee. What kind of human are they? But anyway, moving on. The other reason that has been going around on social media is that it's destroying your gut health. And I think like most of us are aware we shouldn't have too much of it for like anxiety, stress, sleep, whatever, like that side of things. But this gut health angle seems to be a new one. I did want to just dig into it and just make sure we're giving the right information. So I actually reached out to the dietitian that we had on the show a couple of months ago, just to make sure I had my facts straight, Nicole, and asked her like, what's the deal with this? And she sent me some studies over and she was like, look, same with everything we say, basically. If you have a generally balanced diet with lots of whole foods, a couple of cups of coffee a day are not a problem. However, it does affect your nutrient absorption. So it does affect your absorption of iron, calcium, and magnesium. If you're going to have your coffee with your iron, like you're going to have your steak with a coffee, like it might have an issue. However, if you're getting your iron from animal sources, it doesn't affect it as much anyway.
Yeah.
So there is a way that you could be eating where your coffee is undermining the absorption of your minerals. However, the chances are you're not having your coffee at the time of day that you're having these minerals. And equally, if you're having a well-balanced diet and it's got some animal protein and animal iron in there, it's probably okay.
Yeah. It's like the common through line, which we've said, isn't it? Like, yeah. If you have an overall balanced diet, if you have things in moderation, like, you will likely be okay. And anything in extremes, or if you have a health condition, yes, you need to pay more attention. And like, that kind of makes sense. I think with a lot of stuff that gets like plastered around social media nowadays, it is just using, you know, a bit of common sense around it and just being like, yeah, you know, if you're drinking 7-8 cups of coffee a day and having 2 cups of tea and a pre-workout, probably not great. If you're having a couple of cups of coffee a day and you have an overall like balanced diet and you feel fine, I'm pretty sure your coffee's good for you.
You raise a really good point there about caffeine doesn't just come from coffee, as you said. Yes. About pre-workout. And I think that maybe the whole discussion at the moment is like just picking on coffee, whereas actually caffeine is the thing that makes your heart pound and affects your digestion. Well,
Brits are terrible for this with tea.
Yeah. Yes. So I have got so many friends that wouldn't dream of having a coffee at 7 o'clock at night, but they'll happily have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And I've actually got the stats because I was like, people need to know this stuff. So a coffee, an instant coffee, can have anything from like 30 to 100 milligrams of caffeine. A cup of tea, 25 to 50. So it probably is less.
Yeah.
But it also, depending on how strong you have it, could be about the same as having a cup of coffee. Yeah. And an espresso is like 50 to 65 milligrams.
And what's an instant coffee?
Anything from like 30 to 100. And
so you're basically having like double in an espresso. And if you have a large coffee, you're basically having 4 times what you'd normally have in a normal coffee.
You mean an instant coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and also, how many people have a large coffee not realizing that that's got 2 espressos generally? That's what the large is.
Yeah, yeah, probably a lot of people.
Yeah. So if you're having a large coffee, you're probably not having 50 milligrams of caffeine. You're probably having 100.
Yeah.
So just be mindful of that when you're thinking 2 to 3 coffees a day.
If not more as well, by the way, just because we were talking about this yesterday and I was saying Starbucks has got some of the weakest coffee in terms of caffeine for the espresso shots versus I think like Costa in the UK has got like the most.
Yeah.
But it will be different in different places that you go. And you do find that sometimes you go somewhere and you have a large coffee and you're like, woof.
Yeah.
Like it gives you like a kick.
Yeah.
And like that's probably a sign that that's got a lot more caffeine in it. So if you had a large coffee and you had felt something like that, that's probably a sign like, hey, if you normally did have like 2 or 3 coffees that day, if you get another one from that place, maybe have a small.
There was a place in Brunei, I had a coffee one time from there and I was like, I feel sick and shaky because they obviously have a different blend. Yeah. And actually that is an important fact to note. Robusta coffee beans have almost double the amount of caffeine than Arabica.
Wow.
So I'm
not going to act like I know what the difference is.
Okay, so it's basically just 2 different types of coffee bean from a different plant.
Right, yeah.
But they taste different. So like Robusta, the name kind of gives it away. It's like that really strong, bitter kind of flavor to it. Arabica is more like the softer, you might have it in more of like an espresso on its own because you wouldn't want it to be too bitter.
We went to, me and Si were in Bali last year and we had this poo coffee.
Oh yeah.
What was it? It was, I don't know.
The animals poo it out.
The animals poo it out, yeah, and you have it as coffee.
Like fermented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I
don't think anyone's going to be buying that at Walmart.
No.
Luwak.
Luwak. And what animal is it from? But that had caffeine in it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it did.
But I'm just like, how did someone's poo have coffee? Anyway.
I think the coffee bean just comes out the other. I don't really. Oh, they're kind of cute. Anyway, me digress.
Yeah, we do.
So your coffee, what coffee you get makes a difference. Mm. And pretty much every coffee establishment will put on their website or you'll see it on the packet, like what is in that coffee. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have more cups of coffee per day because you like the taste of it, then maybe go for a more Arabica-based blend. Also, think about how many espressos you're having in your drink.
What is the daily recommended dose? I think off memory for me, it was 400 milligrams. Is that right or is it less?
It is 400 is like a max, really.
Yeah. Like, that is a lot.
Probably most people, you really, I would personally say like 200 milligrams, don't stress about it.
Yeah.
If it goes to 400 every now and then, also don't stress. 400 every day, probably not the best.
Some pre-workout formulas, so like what you take for the gym, some of them have got I'd say they average between 150 and 400 in the doses. So some people are having that and then some people like double scoop.
So 400 milligrams of caffeine in one is like having, I can't even do the math, 8 espressos.
Yeah, and I think a can of Monster is about 200 milligrams.
160,
and, yeah. And I think there's somewhat, there's an up energy drink that has 200. So there's a few that have got that in, and that is a lot. So I think that's just like sometimes people go, oh, I'm just kind of getting my caffeine from a pre-workout or an energy drink, but then they're having two or three cups of coffee and a cup of tea or two and a diet drink. And it so quickly adds
Coke,
up. Yeah.
Yeah, or even chocolate.
So I don't think I've mentioned this. So when I was personal training many, many years ago, I definitely abused caffeine. So I would wake up, I'd have a cup of coffee, then I'd make another cup of coffee to drive to the gym. Then I would do a couple of personal training sessions, then I'd have another cup of coffee, then I'd take a pre-workout to do my workout session. Then I would go home, try and get like a nap before coming back in for like the next part of the day, have another cup of coffee, and then have an energy drink before I started my next sessions.
Oh my God.
So I was having maybe 800 to 1100 milligrams of caffeine a day. And I had like really bad gut issues. I was like on the way home, I was like bloated, my stomach was hurting, I was passing a lot of gas. And I just thought that was normal. I didn't realize, like I was basically just abusing sleep for the hours that I was doing and then just like masking that with caffeine. But then it was having a knock-on effect on my sleep that night because I was like wired when I got home. But yeah, the gut issues were just were not nice either. Like the constant bloatedness and gas.
That's actually a really good point because I think a lot of the time we just get these habits that increase over time. We don't really realize. And then a lot of our clients, you know, a big reason they join us is they're not happy with the way they look and feel. And it is the energy levels. But it's also like this midsection that just won't budge. Mm. And you know, sometimes, often it is body fat, but sometimes there's stuff that's underneath the body fat that you can address, like the bloating.
Yeah.
And little changes like this are also gonna benefit how you're feeling, your energy levels, like how you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. You're just overall gonna feel better. So if there are any doubts, then give it a go cutting back and be mindful that it's not just coffee.
Just try and even look, I think as we've said with everything so far is like try and have a good gauge of like how much caffeine you are having per day. And
yeah, just maybe keep a little log for a few days.
Yeah, because I used to be more someone who drank more like 4 or 5 cups of coffee and now it's more like 2-3 and that just incrementally got a bit less because I started to feel better. I actually find I really like a hot drink. So I like the habit of having a hot drink, but I just have like decaf tea of an evening. So I like to have a cup of tea or a drink of an evening or after dinner, but I just have decaf. So I still get the hot drink, but it's just without the
Also,
the
there's so many good herbal teas now. Like it used to just be a bit of a like hippie auntie thing. Like, oh, they got peppermint or chamomile. Like that's it. Yeah. There's so many delicious blends now or like fruit blends that you don't really even need to turn to something caffeinated. So yeah, consider what you're having a day. And then if you do want to keep coffee, absolutely go for it. Yeah. Like we're not saying don't have coffee, but you are now informed as to like maybe how much would have an impact. And if you are struggling with any of these side effects, then this is maybe something to consider. But it's not a blanket across the board. Everyone should avoid coffee. It's going to ruin your gut health. In fact, coffee itself, if we take caffeine out of the mix, has got loads of antioxidants in, which we just talked about being good, right?
Yeah.
So coffee itself is actually a healthful choice in moderation. If you have got weight loss goals, though, probably consider how you're taking your coffee. Because especially if you're getting it from somewhere like a Starbucks or a Costa and you're having a latte or a caramel latte or whatever
calories
it is.
Calories can add up fast.
Yeah, it is probably something that you need to consider if you want to be watching your calories. Maybe just going for an Americano might serve you better with your goals.
Yeah, definitely.
And then pre-workout, I did want to just tackle that because we do get asked, like, should I be taking a pre-workout? Do I need one? What's your thoughts on this?
So I'll just give my personal experience first, which is I used to take pre-workouts all the time and then eventually become like reliant on them. And I've spoken openly a lot about like not having crutches and I felt like I had a crutch. So it was like, oh, if I forgot my pre-workout, I'd like drive home to go and get it and come back, even though I was like parked outside the gym. Like what a waste of time. But that's probably more a reflection of like my energy levels back then and not getting enough sleep. But also just like it does give you a bit of a buzz and you feel like, oh yeah, I'm now like psychologically I'm going to have a better workout because of that. You know, the caveat to that is, yes, one, it becomes a crutch. Two, you're possibly getting a lot of extra caffeine that you don't need. If I ever do buy pre-workouts now, I'll always try and get something that's like under 150 milligrams or I'll get a non-stim. So you can get non-stim pre-workouts, which can give you all the benefits just without the caffeine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a huge one. And then the bigger one would be, I would not be taking a pre-workout formula if I worked out of an evening just at all. Cause it's just not It's not.
Well, caffeine has a half-life, which is about 5 hours. So if you were going to the gym at 5, 6, 7 o'clock, it's not even going to be remotely out of your system by bedtime.
If you're going to take a pre-workout and you go to bed at like anywhere between 9 and sort of or 8 and 11 p.m., anywhere after 2 p.m., I just would not be touching something with that amount of caffeine in it. And that is that strong. Don't get me wrong. It's not like you're going to go and, I just don't think it's worth it for the cost to use the quality of your sleep.
Something you said is really important. You can actually develop a tolerance to caffeine.
Oh, you do, massively.
You need more to then feel the benefits, and it becomes a slippery slope. So if you feel like there are days where you're low in energy, maybe you didn't get a great night's sleep, and it's like a one-off, and you use it to just like optimize performance occasionally, I think there's a place for it. And the research does show, like, if you're, particularly if you're doing like power or speed or endurance training, there is good research behind it. Mm-hmm. However, for strength training, actually, there's not very conclusive evidence. Yep. So if you personally feel like you get a benefit from it, cool. But don't feel like you need it to perform at your best, because it isn't the case.
No.
There's often many other things that you can tweak and refine to get yourself in the best position to go into that gym than taking a pre-workout.
For me, the best pre-workout is a good night's sleep, being hydrated, and maybe getting a bit of sodium in your diet. And you can probably get that if you had a lot in the meal the night before. Like, I always find if I've had sushi the night before, because if I've had loads of soy sauce, loads of sodium, like, I just find like the pump that you get off the workout is ridiculous, which is often what you're trying to get from a pre-workout formula, just to get more blood into the muscle. But yeah, it's again, just trying to limit crutches. You want to, if you find yourself saying, I need the pre-workout, I need my coffee, I need this, you just, when life eventually happens, which it does to all of us, you just become more fragile.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I see it. It's like the fewer of crutches that you can have, you can enjoy your pre-workout, you can enjoy your coffee, you can enjoy these certain things, but the fewer you can have and become reliant on, like, the more like unfuckable you are, to an extent. So just like,
and just like lean on it when you really need it. Don't have it as a baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah. You touched on sodium there, and I did want to cover this later. We might as well talk about it now.
Sure.
Yeah, electrolytes.
Yes.
Again, bit of a trending thing of everyone shouldn't be just drinking water. They should be drinking sodium water or electrolyte drinks. Mm-hmm. What's the deal with that?
So again, if you have a whole, like, a pretty balanced diet and get lots of nutrients from it, like, it's, you don't need to be taking electrolyte formulas. And then when you're drinking a drink first thing of the morning that is like pink and purple and all these different colors, I mean, that wasn't there 100 years ago, was it?
This should be the name of the episode.
And yes, are you going to get slightly more high? Are you going to get more hydrated by taking electrolytes first thing in the morning? Yes.
Can we just explain why? So water, we all know we need water for hydration, but water can't actually get to where it's supposed to be in your body and do the job it's supposed to do without electrolytes. They're almost like your little chauffeurs.
And your electrolytes are?
You got the biggest one's sodium, then you got chloride and potassium, and a little bit of calcium, magnesium. So as I'm saying these, you're probably thinking, oh, calcium, that's in milk. Oh, magnesium, that's in nuts. It is.
Yes.
So you don't actually need to also have a sachet of them if you're eating a balanced diet. If you're working away, you know you're eating crap, you're feeling like really drained, a bit of brain fog, fatigue, like you're getting crampy muscles, twitchy muscles. Again, in that moment where you need the help,
electrolytes,
use it. But if you're just day-to-day life,
that's normally more of a reflection of your diet.
Exactly. Yeah. Just eat well.
The only time I take electrolytes is when I'm in a really hot country and I'm like working out. So like when I've just been in Australia or Ibiza or different countries, and it's like a sweat box in the gym, and there's like, you lose 2 liters of water while you're working out. So you're drinking a lot more. So you, when you're in these hot countries, instead of my water intake maybe being like 3 liters in a day, it's like 5-6. So I'm drinking a ton more water and I'm losing it as well because I'm sweating. At that point, I will actually take electrolytes because I'm drinking and losing so much in the same sort of.
And those, you know, when you get that like salty, like sweat residue, that's what that is. That's your electrolytes.
Yeah. But other than that, like typically, again, just a sign of like, if you need a pre-workout or you need caffeine all the time, it's probably a sign that you're not addressing your sleep or your diet or other parts of your health. Just like here, if you don't need electrolytes if you have an overall balanced diet.
And like there are pretty well respected people out there saying it's not going to do you any harm to take it every day, and it kind of then covers all bases that you've got that baseline amount. But it's like any supplement, it should be there as a supplement, and it's just to maybe backfill the odd day that you're a bit lower, rather than rely on that then not have to worry about your diet. But you don't really need it. And the thing is, it does, they do a really important job, but you don't have to buy in fancy products for it either. So sometimes just adding a little bit of salt to your food can be enough. Like, I know for me, when I lived in a hot country, that I felt awful for a while, and I just couldn't figure it out. I was drinking like 4 liters of water. I was like, why? What's going on? And then I twigged and I was like, oh yeah, it's my electrolytes. I literally just started adding a bit of salt to my dinner. That was it. And it was fine. So you don't need to even buy a specific product. And if you do, like, even those basic things, like when you're sick, you know, you're gonna get like diurolite. I don't know if they have that in America. Like, that is the mix that you need. You don't need to buy some snazzy sports edition version. And actually, sports drinks don't have that much in them. They've got loads of glucose in them. They're good for energy, but they're not actually that great for your electrolytes. The other one that gets banded around is coconut water, being like a natural electrolyte source. It's got potassium in it, but not much of everything else. So if you like coconut water, go for it. But don't kind of think, oh, well, that's my electrolytes, so I don't need to worry about everything else.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and when it comes to putting the salt in the water, and we can just maybe just fact check this so we're 100%, it is rock salt that you want to use, not like a typical table salt.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. So it's giving me like a nod, like, yes, it is, and then there's being like, would that also include like pink Himalayan salt? Because that's a
It's a natural product as opposed to a refined chemically created.
So like your rock salt, your pink Himalayan salt, but not necessarily just like your table salt that you typically would have in a...
Can we also just say salt water tastes like shit?
Like, it depends on what you put in it, of course.
I'd rather just put it on my food. Put it on my eggs, in fact.
Put it on your eggs,
But yeah, but also you don't want to go too mad with your salt either, because coming back to the blood pressure thing we were talking about earlier, it does have implications. So everything we're talking about is just be sensible. Like, there's a reason our grandparents used to salt their food, and then our parents went, whoa, we better not salt our food, because too much of anything is
and
the
you'll
problem.
Typically find if you are having a more highly processed diet in typically a lot of processed foods, there's a lot of sodium. So most people probably already getting way enough sodium in their diets on a day-to-day basis. But if you were to like dial that back and have like loads of whole foods and maybe more of a bland, plainer diet, like less ingredients, should I say, you may not be getting enough. So then, add more salty food. Maybe a bit of salty water can definitely help.
Actually, I found that when, because I cook for us and Nate at the same time, and obviously kids can't process as much sodium as we can because they're smaller. So I don't salt anything when I cook anymore. And then I serve it up and we're both like, oh God, this tastes so bad. So we have to add it at the table. But it's amazing how if you don't consciously add it, because we're used to eating food that is really quite highly salted.
Yeah, it is.
Even if you buy like a healthy meal out or like a sandwich or something, it will be quite salted. If you don't cook with any, you'll really notice it. So maybe start with that as your baseline, just add a little bit, and you know, you're in a good space.
Definitely.
So linking on nicely from hydration is water itself. Apparently there's all these special kinds of water we should be drinking now.
Wild. I mean, I always think anything that you do on a day-to-day basis, if you can address and move the needle with, you are probably going to see quite a significant difference. So, you know, like things that we do on a day-to-day basis, whether that's the food that we eat, the water that we drink, where we live, you know, just our day-to-day actions, they're the things that can literally alter your life and can move the needle in big ways. So yes, do I think getting the highest quality water available to you is a good idea? Like, yes, but for most people that could just be tap water filtered. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be. I think you've got a list here, haven't you, of all the
alkaline water, hydrogen water.
So I was saying before, wasn't
ionized
I?
Ionized like, water.
The different types of water, like I've, what did you just say? You said ionized? No, the one before.
Alkaline.
So I have been sold or tried to be sold alkaline water in taxis 3 times by 3 different taxi drivers. And they've got this special machine where they filter the water and then they put it into these bottles and it's going to alkaline your body. And you're not going to get cancer. Like you say, you're not going to get cancer if you drink alcohol. And I'm like, and then it's like, that's why in Japan, they've got these machines in all the hospitals. And I'm like, this is like just going on borderline like conspiracy theory at this point. And yeah, you know, it's one of them. And I think it's like a buzzword and people want to like try and sell you this, sell you that. But for like most people, I think it's just like your tap water filtered is going to be like as good as you get.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Just a quick ask. If you are enjoying today's episode, then please do give us a follow just to make sure you get every episode and we can keep cutting the BS and helping you hit your goals. Let's just get into this alkaline thing though, because again, it's one of those where there's a teeny tiny grain of something that's then just been blown out of proportion. So people claim it's anti-aging, it's going to stop you getting cancer, it's going to stop you getting heart disease. Mm-hmm. But actually, there are tiny bits of studies that show some links to some benefits.
Yeah.
There's even one that shows increased bone density in perimenopausal women with alkaline diet and alkaline water intake. Mm. So it's not complete fallacy. However, they are very individual studies that maybe aren't the best design. And also they don't stand up against the rest of the body of evidence. Mm. They also don't stand up against the fact like water, if we're just talking about alkaline water, the only thing about it is it's got a higher pH than your tap water. Mm-hmm. So it's less acidic, more alkaline, right? But the fact is, your body is so clever. If you, whatever you eat or whatever you drink, it's not going to change the state of your body that much because your body has to stay within very strict parameters to be able to function. So for your body to function well, it needs to stay within a range of 7.35 to 7.45 pH. That's very, very small.
Yeah.
If you drink some alkaline water, your body is going to have to work to deal with it. But that's not going to change the pH of your body.
Yeah.
So it's really important to understand that you're not going to be able to change the pH of your blood by drinking a few bottles of special water. Mm-hmm. And you probably don't need to either.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the reason that this whole thing has become a thing is because alkaline water naturally is just because of where it comes from. If we think about like a spring water, like the spring water that travels over certain rocks and picks up certain minerals, that happens to be more alkaline. Now, the minerals that happen to make it more alkaline are calcium, potassium, magnesium.
Right.
We've just talked about being really good for you. They're electrolytes. Like you need them to function well, for your brain to spark, for your muscles to work. So actually when we put two and two together, we think, these alkaline waters contain more of these minerals and those minerals are essential for health. So it must be that we need alkaline water. It's not actually the case.
Yeah.
So think when you actually really understand why people are putting these two and twos together and making seven, you can just go straight to source and say, hey, okay, I get it. I need calcium, potassium, magnesium. Mm. I'm going to eat some dairy and some bananas and some Brazil nuts.
Yeah.
So please don't waste your money giving it over to taxi drivers for bottles of water.
Yeah. And but you know, just coming back to like the quality of the water as well. Like if the tap water that you get in where you live is safe and it can be filtered for most people, like especially in the UK, that's going to be like a great way of the water that you're getting.
Yeah.
In some places. Yeah. Like even when we go like abroad, we go to places in Europe, it says like, don't drink the tap water. So, you know, I think like being mindful of that. But most people, if you're getting like bottled water or you're getting tap water that you can filter, you know, you're probably getting like pretty high quality water at that point. Yeah.
If you do live in a developed country, there is going to be things like the Environment Protection Agency or, you know, there'll be regulations that need to be met in terms of the safety of the water. Mm-hmm. And it will, there's debate, especially in the US, because states have their own ability to interpret those regulations. So maybe some states might be more safe than other states drinking water. But if you have any concerns, like you said, filtration is an option. And I think the concern in some places, some countries, some areas is also, you know, what about the pesticides and chemicals that are being used on the fields and that running into the water supply? What about bacteria? What about fluoride being added? Which, it was added. I don't even know when they started doing it. I want to say like the 60s, maybe they started adding it to drinking water because they realized it was so good for teeth. Mm-hmm. And we don't generally get enough of it in our diets. But there is now more and more evidence coming out to say like high levels of fluoride can affect brain function.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of hesitancy there. And I get it. If there's if the science isn't conclusive, then maybe err on the side of caution.
It also makes water taste a bit nicer. Have you ever drank it? Have you ever drank like actual plain water with nothing?
Well, yeah, that's not necessarily the fluoride though. That's just the filtration.
The other side of things that are in it. But yeah, I think it's doing a little bit of due diligence, but like most people, the tap water will be fine. And if you can filter it, that's going to make it even better.
Definitely. But I mean, you also don't need to filter it generally.
Yeah. I do find that when you say stuff like this, especially like things are very different in the UK than they are to like the States.
Yeah. And if we are.
Yeah. If you were to say something like, oh, tap water is fine in the US, like anytime I've gone to like LA or certain states, people like just bite my head off for that. Like, don't drink the tap water. And it's like, yeah, like if the water is bad in your state or county and you know that, then yes, you know, take a little bit of responsibility and either filter the water or use bottled water or do whatever you've got to do. My caution on bottled water as well, to an extent, not that I've got anything against bottled water, but a lot of people buy crates of bottled water and leave it in the car.
Oh, yeah.
And like the sun's just like beaming on the car and like beaming in the plastics, and the plastics are getting into the water because they leave them there for months, or they reuse the same bottled water again and again and again, and more plastics do get into the water. And that's something just to be wary of if you're using bottled water on a regular basis.
So maybe coming back to that option of filtration is possibly a better option.
Yeah.
But also better for the planet.
Yes, less plastic.
I've got two more things I did want to just cut the BS on. One is about dairy. And I was actually really surprised with the research that I found, because it's almost like an urban legend, like dairy causes inflammation and dairy causes mucus. And I personally have had periods in my life where I haven't had dairy because of IBS or like feeding my son who had dairy intolerance. But it doesn't cause inflammation or mucus.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is probably with dairy and how people tolerate it is going to be like, again, it's just like person dependent.
Yeah.
You know, we were just speaking to Sam before. He said he's cut dairy out and it started, he feels better for it. It's like, good. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like dairy's the worst thing ever. You had a stage after food poisoning where dairy was not agreeing with you, but I just watched you eat a whole cheese board last night.
And I'm so happy for it. But actually, it may not make you feel the best, but that doesn't mean it's because of inflammation or mucus. And I think it's really important, like we come back to that thing we talked about at the beginning. Your body is different to everybody else's body. And the only person who can tell you what feels good or doesn't feel good is you. And actually, you don't need some science to tell you that. Like if you're tuning into how food makes you feel and you get a bit bloated or you feel a bit foggy after having certain foods, keep a food diary and just notice what it is. Because it might not even be the dairy. It might be you always have dairy because you have it on a pizza and the pizza is obviously made with gluten. Maybe it's the gluten. Like, who knows until you start doing that self-analysis. But actually, the evidence now really shows that dairy can be linked to a decreased risk of inflammation. So if you're avoiding it, and it has become quite a trendy thing to be dairy-free and opt for oat milk, which we're going to talk about in a minute. but it's almost become like a lifestyle choice rather than a health choice. And it's just maybe because of this fear of it causing inflammation or just generally being a bad guy. There is no evidence to show that is the case. What I would say is milk and dairy products do contain generally quite a lot of saturated fat. So if you're having milk in your tea or your coffee, or you're having some yogurt, you're having some cheese, it's probably fine. But if you're having processed foods that are made with milk or cheese, cheesy flavored things, that's probably more the issue than the fact that there's dairy in that product.
Yeah, I would agree. Again, dangers in the dosage, in moderation, and if you have a healthy diet, that's a through line to all. If you're active, you have an overall healthy diet, balanced diet, like milk, dairy, fine. If it doesn't agree with you and you find that, like, fine, like, you know, you're good to cut it out. You will typically find, and I think this is something that people forget, if you cut anything out your diet for a prolonged period of time and then even just have a little bit of it, your body probably won't tolerate it the best. It's like some people I know who have gone like completely cut processed foods out the diet, like they're like 100% whole foods, And then you might go to like a wedding or something and then they eat maybe more processed foods that are available or there. And then they feel horrendous. And it's because your body's just not used to it or not used to tolerating it. And I think it's the same like with dairy. If you have cut it out and want to bring it back in, don't just like go from like nothing to a full cheese board. But, you know, maybe just start to bring a little bit back in and see how you feel. Because, yeah, I think a lot of people do have that. They go like fully on a diet train and then they go back to maybe more normality and then feel horrendous again. And then they think something's up. And sometimes I think it's the extremes that cause the issues.
Absolutely. And the reason why I am now like embracing the cheese again is because it's not a healthy, balanced diet if there are whole food groups that you're not eating ever. So if there is a small amount that you can tolerate or there is something that is proven to not be harmful like dairy, there's no need to completely cut it out.
Yeah.
What I would say is look at the least processed options. And even when we come down to things like yogurt, that means like finding just look at the packet. It literally should just contain like milk, maybe some bacteria. Like that's it. It shouldn't have flavorings, sugar, colorings, all of that stuff. Yep. If you are wanting to optimize your health. So look at the least processed options and just consider your overall fat intake.
Yeah, definitely.
Final one, because if you're not having dairy, maybe you're having oat milk. And also that is the devil apparently as well. So we just should probably answer this one off. Basically, people think that oats are this massive problem.
Oats are making you fat. You shouldn't have oats. Like out of all the foods in the world, I mean, like fruits being getting labeled and enabled as well. Like loads of people saying like oats are just horrendous for you for all these different reasons. And like out of like all the breakfast cereals to go for, you know, we got Cocoa Pops. We got, you know, Cheerios.
We got
all these like foods that don't really look like food. We can tell
they weren't there 100 years ago.
They weren't there 100 years. You can tell we've made them and manufactured them. But oats, you know, that's what we're going. We're going to gun for oats. Just wild. I think I've done like a reaction video on this before and about, you know, people just like saying, oh, it's a bad for you and it's going to spike your insulin and insulin's going to cause you not to lose body fat. And it's just like, and then like the comments are just like 100 people basically going, oh, I've been eating oats as with like berries and flaxseed and it's been like a really delicious breakfast I've been having and I've lost like 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, the thing with it is oats actually it can help regulate your blood sugar, even though there's all this talk at the moment of, oh, if you have oats for breakfast, it's going to spike your blood sugar. And because this continuous glucose monitoring trend is everywhere, where people are sticking these things on their arms and they're eating their porridge and then seeing this spike, that's actually not a problem in and of itself. I think that's really important. We did do a great episode with Martin McDonald, who is very well respected in the nutrition space. You know, he was talking about this study they've done, which showed even one person one day could have that bowl of oats and have the spike. The next day they could have no spike or a small spike. The next day they could have a medium spike. It's just whatever else is going on in your body as well.
Your body having that response is normal. It's supposed to happen. You should be worried maybe if it's never happening at all to an extent. It's the same with like blood pressure. Like if you took someone's blood pressure like after doing a heavy set of squats, probably be through the bloody roof. Like your body is having a natural response to what's happening, and it doesn't necessarily mean that all these things are always bad. It's normal. Like again, it's the dosage, it's the consistency, and it's how often it's happening and whether it's actually affecting you personally.
Yeah. So it's like you don't need to worry about the fact it's going to mess up your insulin or cause glucose spikes and that's going to be a bad thing. It's actually probably a great choice for breakfast because it's high in fiber, low in the glycemic index. So like the rate that the sugar gets into your bloodstream is a lot lower than, say, Cheerios, because you've got to break down that whole food and it's encased in the fiber. And that does also lead into one of the reasons why people say, oh, well, oats are bad because they've got these anti-nutrients. And oat milk's got anti-nutrients. I just want to cut the BS on that a minute because phytic acid is what they're talking about here. And it basically is a compound that's in, if you think about like a shell of a grain or a seed or a nut, like there's that layer over the top, isn't there? There is a compound called phytic acid that is in those little like encasements. And it is an anti-nutrient, if you want to call it that. It does affect the absorption of other foods in your gut. However, only applies if the skin is on the thing. So oats themselves, especially in oat milk, they don't have like the oat bran, like the wrapper, if you want to call it that. So that for one, let's not stress about that. Even if it did, it does affect the absorption of calcium, iron and zinc, but only if you eat those things at the same time.
Right.
So if you're getting some calcium and some iron and some zinc later on in the day, mm-hmm. and you have your oats in the like for breakfast, it's not an issue.
Yeah.
So you want to be looking at your overall consumption through the day, not just like worrying about one meal, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that is also why people say, oh, you need to be careful with soaking chickpeas or lentils. It's the same anti-nutrient that people are talking about. Mm-hmm. And soaking or cooking can really reduce the impact of that phytic acid. So if it is something that you personally are worried about, you probably don't need to. But if you want to do something about it, soaking your oats overnight, making overnight oats can help break that phytic acid down. Yeah. Yep. In fact, it used to be a thing, like, I don't know, my nan, she wasn't Scottish or anything, but she had oats every morning with salt, which I think is quite a Scottish thing. But anyway, she always soaked the oats overnight, and then it only takes like a minute to cook them instead of like 6 minutes or something. I don't know.
What, so you just soak them in the milk and then just throw them straight in the pan?
Yeah, or water. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it just breaks down that phytic acid. And I do think a lot of these older habits, you know, like our grandparents had, they evolved and were passed down through families because it was just found to be an easier, healthier, felt better way. No one really knew the science behind it. They just know that they felt better. Mm-hmm. And if you look at other cultures that cook, you know, a lot of legumes, beans, chickpeas, they generally don't cook them and eat them in like 20 minutes. They'll soak them or it'll be a long, slow cook. Same kind of reason, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are wanting to manage the amount of phytic acid that you're getting in your diet, that's a really quick, simple win.
Yeah.
And overnight oats are delicious.
Overnight oats are delicious.
Yeah.
But I think it's if you're having the odd oat milk latte or the odd bowl of oats or porridge and stuff on a regular basis, it's not an issue.
It's not an issue. What I would say, though, as we've been talking about throughout, is just check your packet.
Yeah.
Because it's probably not the phytic acid that's the problem. Mm-hmm. So if you look at some oat milks, they are very simple ingredient lists. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fine. Some of them have got loads of different like preservatives, mm-hmm. like E numbers, sugars added.
Yeah.
The other thing is barista blends. Unfortunately, they do taste better because they've got they've got like oil added to them and different kind of emulsifiers to make the texture really nice and creamy. But they do tend to ramp up in the calories. And obviously, you've got all those extra added bits and pieces that are in there. So again, if you're having one oat latte every couple of days, fine. Probably don't want to be having the barista blend on your cereal and in multiple drinks through the day.
Yeah.
If possible. Mm-hmm. So just check your packets. Because some cups of oat milk is going to be like a couple grams of sugar. Some of them are like 25 grams of sugar.
Quite a lot.
Per cup.
Yeah.
So just knowledge is power.
I would say as well, is like a lot of the quick snack instant oats in a packet. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they're not going to be like the highest quality oats and probably like the, you know, the more of a processed food.
Yes.
And they probably got a lot of extra sugar in or sweeteners in. So again, like fine, like every now and then. But again, these are always the things that if I was having something like that, someone said, hey, I'm having a cup of oats from a supermarket that's in a plastic cup that I pour some water in or milk and I'm having it on a daily. Like if it was like, oh, I'm just traveling, fine. But if I'm just, if I'm having it on a daily basis, yeah, I would try and move more towards the least processed version.
That's a really good point, actually, because even we're talking about processing being all oats are oats, it's still been processed and cut up into little bits. Mm. So there is less processing for your body to do. And actually, if we look at the impact on your blood sugar, the less processed the oats, the better. So if you've got like jumbo oats, steel cut oats, rolled oats, that's going to be way better than those instant oats, particularly if they are flavored and sugared and all of that business.
Yeah.
And if you want to level up again, then add some fats and proteins, which is also a common theme
that's
here.
That's it, isn't it? Like if you were to get like steel cut oats and then you were to put in some, you know, raspberries, blueberries, maybe even mixed in like half a scoop of protein with it or something.
Yeah.
You've now got like,
or like a dollop of Greek yogurt.
Yeah. Or even some like Greek yogurt instead. You've got like a really nutritious, satiating meal that's going to be really tasty.
Yeah, definitely. So as I said at the beginning, I did repeat myself a lot. I apologize. But generally, if you're eating a well-balanced diet with the majority of your foods are minimally processed, we should maybe make that a new tagline. If the majority of your foods could have been bought 100 years ago, you're good.
You're pretty good, yeah. I mean, that is the case. You know, it's like, and that's why when we're always saying like, you know, 80% of your diet come from like minimally processed, nutrient-dense whole foods. It's like those foods from like mostly like 100 years ago. And then 20%, yeah, if you want to have that bag of Doritos or you want to have that ice cream or whatever else it is, like, you can have that because the majority of your diet is coming from these whole foods, and you're probably ticking all the boxes off for your nutrients, your minerals, your fiber. That color in your diet is getting ticked off by doing that.
Variety is important too.
Variety. So, you know, it just allows it. And then, like, you know, on top of that, then if you've got a bit of muscle on your body and you're active, like, a lot of these issues that people raise, they just often won't apply to you because you're living an overall active and healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. And if you have got any concerns and you hear some kind of crazy claim on the internet, please message us, because we always love to lay it down.
Definitely.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you did enjoy that little delve into nutrition, we actually did a really great episode with Martin McDonald, who is a nutritionist, and we dug deep into the science of nutrition, continuous glucose monitoring. So if you really want to get geeky on it, go and check out episode number 47.